Welcome to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. I'm so glad you're joining us wherever you are. We're so grateful those of you joining us on television here in Santa Barbara area of California. We're grateful for you and so many of our friends here locally. And of course, so many of you joining us around the world on all these different platforms, and especially the YouTube channel and the website and the podcast, which over the last year has really grown a lot. So you can search for Good Life Conversations. They drop the episodes into that podcast all the time. So any of the podcast platforms, just search Good Life Conversations and you can listen there. But we're so grateful. We're so grateful for so many friends. And it's just been such a rich time these last few years as we've gotten to meet some incredible people from all over the world and introduce them to you, and it's a privilege. So thank you for joining us, and I'm so grateful today for my guest. He's in Nashville, Tennessee. Steve Hines is with me. Steve, welcome.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here, Dean.
And you can hear the Alabama when you listen to Steve. Steve spent most of born in Tennessee actually, but then spent most of his life in Birmingham, Alabama, and then recently, in recent years, he's moved up to Nashville, and he's almost a full-time grandpa at this point from what I'm hearing. But so just a quick introduction of Steve. Steve's been an entrepreneur. He's kind of a CPA by training, but he's been an entrepreneur. He's been a coach, an author, a speaker. He's was part of the founding of Chris Hodges' big church. I think, what is it, Highlands? Is it Highlands Church?
Church of Highlands, yeah.
Yeah, Church of Highlands, okay. And which is a big church down there in Alabama. And so Chris Hodges actually wrote the foreword to this recent book that we're going to be talking with Steve about in a minute. But so Steve, really successful career in business. He's been a coach. He's obviously been a parent and now a grandparent. And he's written a really outstanding new book on parenting that we're going to dive into in a second. But Steve, start with just your life, kind of where you grew up and what life was like for you early on.
Yeah, sure. Born in Nashville, actually. And like you mentioned, I live in Nashville, and I'm probably one out of 100 of the people that live here that was born here. But I moved away when I was about 5 years old and grew up in Birmingham and then moved back to Nashville about 4 years ago because of my granddaughters that you mentioned, and just great childhood, and then grew into my professional career. Like you mentioned, I was a CPA, but then when I was 26, I started my first company because I was tired of working so hard for other people. And ended up starting a few companies and doing a few different things, and am kind of now, like you said, I'm into the author thing and the playing with my granddaughters and soon to be grandson.
Oh, that's so exciting. I'm a little bit behind you in that way, but I'm looking forward to it. I feel like I was made to be a grandpa, so.
And it sounds so cheesy to say, but I've had a wonderful life, great marriage, got to do a lot of good things, but the grandparent thing is my favorite thing so far. It's just so great.
Love it. You know, it's the entrepreneur thing, the you know, starting something, which I'm guessing you're probably, if somebody looked at your spiritual gifts, you're probably an apostolic kind of a guy, if you're a starter and a builder. Which I relate to, but it's no joke. The challenges, the difficulty of doing that is not easy, is it?
It is definitely not easy. And the Lord put that in me. I can remember all the way back in seventh grade, I was the guy that wore the fatigue jacket and sold gum and cinnamon toothpicks to all the students in school. I wasn't supposed to, but I still did. You couldn't chew gum in school back then. So I've always kind of had the entrepreneurial bent.
And the black market gum business.
Oh, yeah. I remember the day gum went from 1 cent to 2 cents. I was in eighth grade, I think, and I was in shock at what that had done to my profit margin. So I put more effort into the cinnamon toothpicks because I could sell those for a quarter a piece, and my margins hadn't been hurt. So, but that spirit that the Lord gave me definitely led me. I've started five companies, I think, over the years, and it's it is not for the faint of heart, for sure. I really enjoy it, but it's a difficult road a lot of times.
Yeah, and you really have to be built for that. I really feel like that does have to be a gifting kind of thing because, you know, there's you want to quit a thousand times. I mean, at least in my experience, and at one point I started three companies at the same time, and two of them were in technology, and I was learning about supply chains in South Korea, and I was like, what am I doing?
Yes.
You know,
Yes.
especially when you're so much out of your control, you know,
Yeah.
not an easy thing.
The last company I started, and we still have, is a technology company, a cybersecurity company. So didn't know anything about it, but a friend of mine and I decided in 16, sounds like a good idea. So we ended up starting a cybersecurity company.
Wow. So you must have just been learning on the fly kind of thing. I mean, unless you're a closet cybersecurity expert, I mean,
yeah,
you probably were kind of learning as you went.
It's strange. So my companies have been, a mortgage company was my first one. Then I did a film production company, and we produced a motion picture. Then I did a sporting goods, apparel, and accessories company. Then I did an angel investing firm. And then we did the cybersecurity. And really, I didn't know anything about any of them when I started them. And that's kind of what I like, because once they get established, I'm kind of like, I would need to go do something else. Where our last company got up to like 100 something employees and had, you know, an HR department and all that. And I was like, oh, I don't like this.
Right.
You know, having to follow all the rules and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
That's not
right.
in my wheelhouse. So, but I enjoy it. I like it a lot.
I love that. Yeah, I totally get that. So, and then just quickly, you know, you've been married to Leanne, I think 35 years or more,
yeah,
if I got that
36.
Right. You're coming up on 36 years. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Marriage is no joke either.
Not at all. We're probably the best we've been marriage wise, but it's been and we've been together, we started dating in high school. So looking back, and we talk about it a lot, it has been something we've had to stay on top of the entire time. And we've gone through plenty of rough patches, exclusively because of me, actually. And so it's something just like parenting or starting a company or whatever it is, you just got to leave it all on the field and give it everything you have to be successful.
Yeah, I think, I have great admiration for marriages that go the distance. And we just recently had a wedding for our oldest daughter. So we're now,
I saw that.
So we're seeing the next generation. And I was, I was reflecting just on, you know, the power and the generational impact of marriages that go the distance. And again, no judgment for anybody. I think anybody who's been around different marriages in their life. I mean, they're, you know, I had a friend, I have a friend, he's 91 and he's, you know, he's sharp as a tack. And he said, I totally get divorce. I mean, he's like, I totally get divorce. I don't really get, the harder thing to understand is how people actually stay married.
That's right.
With two human beings in the equation. But it's so rich and powerful. And the rewards, I think, when you get further down the road are so great.
It's amazing. And kind of, I mentioned, we're just in such a good place now with the grandkids and all that. It's just the funnest time of life because of those relationships that work so well. But there was not a magic flip we switched or anything like that. It's still takes, you know, work. We have to always be kind of looking at, okay, are we doing things we need to do to make sure our marriage stays healthy and all that?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. You can't change each other, can you?
You maybe peripherally you can, but for the most part, no. It's more about you changing to meet that other person rather than
right.
You changing them.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's a, faith wise, I mean, just being, praying for that person and trusting God with that person. I mean, I just think that's such a huge part of what it is, versus, two young people, I'm going to change you into the person that I want to be married to, or that doesn't really work.
No, it doesn't. And God can do miracles, and he's still in the miracle business, and he can have people, with a paradigm shift on a dime, but typically that's not what happens, and it's a slog through marriage. And that's kind of a negative sounding word, but it takes a lot. A lot of marriages in the valley. I love Oswald Chambers, and he talks about being a believer, and the true metal of a believe, METTLE, of a believer is found in the valleys, not on the mountaintops. I think the same thing is true with marriages. How are you doing in the mundane, in the ordinary, in the difficult? And that's where you have to really focus on making sure those times are solid.
Yeah, totally agree. I think the I love this book you've written. The book title, by the way, is Salt, Light, and Kids: Parenting Well in Today's Culture. I don't think there could be a more timely book, is my own opinion. But Salt, Light, and Kids: Parenting Well in Today's Culture. My guest today is Steve Hines. I think about this all the time, and I've said this before, which is, if you want to change the world, focus on your family. I think sometimes the family is underrated, I guess, as it were. If we're sending out young people, we're saying, hey, get the education, get the training, get this, get that, so that you can be, successful and have an impact and make a lot of money. But I don't know that we have the same level of training and prioritize, in a sense, the message of the biggest thing that you can do to impact the world, and the thing that's actually going to bring you the most reward and most joy, is your family, not your career. Not,
That's
it doesn't matter. I mean, it's not like a 60-40 thing, in my view. It's
right.
like a 95-5 thing. Like, your family, your kids, your grandkids, your partner, that's the biggest priority. I mean, that's what I think about for my kids. When I think about for my kids, I have no idea what they're going to do career wise, most of them. I think more in terms of having a great family. So how, I guess, what, before we get to the book, Steve, I guess my question is, how do we change that? How do we, with young people that are coming up now, how do we send that message to say, just like you're getting training for your career, or you're getting education, you need to prepare to be a husband, to be a wife, to be a partner, to be a dad, to be a grandpa. I mean, wouldn't that be something if we really had that as a priority?
It would, and it's difficult, particularly more so now than my kids are 32 and about to turn 30. So, they're adults and married and all that. Still parenting them. They were here last night at our house, and I mean, it never stops. My dad's 94, my mom's 88, and I go visit them, and they're still parenting me, and I'm 60 years old, and what you mentioned about how important the family group is. I remember you mentioned Church of the Highlands. I remember we were there early and, helped in the growth and building that church and all that. But as my kids got older into the teens and then on through high school, we really struggled with where's our priority need to be? Does it need to be leading a small group 4 nights a week or with our kids? And we made the decision over and over that the by far most important small group we had was inside our house, and that nothing should rival the importance of that nucleus. And my kids had kind of different paths, but we had challenges, particularly from my son, a lot back then, some not pleasant at all situations pretty regularly. But now he's 29, about to turn 30, and he's probably the most servant-hearted, Jesus-loving 30-year-old that I know. It's
Wow.
amazing, and God gets all of the glory. But I think back to how we never would have thought when he was 16 that he would look like he did when he's 29, about to turn 30. Night and day, and that's, totally the Lord blessing my son and, giving him a servant heart and all that. But it also, God used us obviously for trying to help mold him and, lead him in the way of righteousness. And he didn't want to have anything to do with it a lot of times. I'm telling you, he was, that's great. I don't want to hear that anymore. He always loved God, but he definitely got off that path. But seeing how the effort we put in
Right.
really paid off. And that's a promise in the Bible, train up a child the way they should go when they won't depart. So I believe in all the promises of the Bible. But if we'd kind of halfway done it, I don't think he would be where he is today. Though once again, giving the glory to the Lord for where my son is.
Yeah. No, it's so important, and so let's talk about this. So you've written a book on parenting, and encourage people to check it out. Salt, Light, and Kids. I think there's a website. saltlightandkids.com, I think is what it is. Parenting well in today's culture. There's incredible thought-provoking questions. There's a lot here, but let's start with kind of just by way of intro, why did you write this book?
I love telling the story. I mentioned my career and in the last couple of years, I've kind of knew it was I didn't want to be doing the professional thing every day, working that hard. So I started praying for God to show me what he wanted me to do. And I thought it would either be a pastor at a church or to do a nonprofit, or I'm also a musician living in Nashville. I wrote a bunch of songs and was thinking, hey, I'll make it in music somehow, songwriter or whatever. And one day, a little over a year ago, I was sitting in the car with my one-year-old granddaughter at that time, who's two now, and she was asleep. And I was in total silence and just sitting there so she could take her nap in the afternoon. And because she had been asleep in the chair, and we didn't want to get her out in the car seat. And the Lord spoke to me, is probably the loudest he ever has, and he said, "I want you to write a book on parenting." I'd never thought about it, never, literally, never had an inkling of a thought. But I knew right then what I was supposed to do, and it was write a book on parenting. Went home and started writing it and had the first draft done in about a week. And I was like, I don't
Wow.
know what your plan is, Lord, but I know this is your plan for me right now. So that's kind of how it just a total one of those, I call it a Damascus Road experience. Just
Right.
lightning and earthquakes and whatever. So I was obedient and wrote the book.
Wow, that's so powerful. You wrote it in a week. That's so stunning.
Yeah, I didn't know what I was doing. And so I just started writing, and I mentioned in the book, I felt at times like I was a scribe because I mean, I just was typing so fast at stuff God wanted me to get out there. Now, after the week became the hard work and getting editors and it was a it's not an easy process either to really get a book to publish, but the first swath of it, yeah, just came out really, really quickly. Then I had the professionals kind of get involved and say, "You're saying something that doesn't make sense," and all that kind of stuff.
Right. So what do you say to parents? I mean, and I think the one of the areas I'd like to have you touch on is what you were just touching on, which is I've been around Christian families, where parents love each other, church, faith. No alcohol in the house in many cases. I've seen some where and they'll have two or three kids and one or two go crazy and for at least for a stretch and you're going, how do these kids come out of the same house? Like or you just don't get it. Like for in teenage we're still kind of in the middle of the teenage thing and I think there's to say it's challenging is understatement, but I think there can be a sense of like failure on the part of the parents. Like, well, wait a second, you know, we invested, we did the work, we, you know, loved each other, we disciplined, we, you know, did all the activities and the sports and the studies and the church and the vacation Bible school. And then all what the world's going on.
Yeah.
How do you counsel that parent?
And I counseled that in my own family, because like I mentioned, my son, when he was in his pretty long, you know, challenging streak, we'll say from a age probably 12 to 22. And my wife, who grew up one of three sisters, so she didn't have any boys around, couldn't understand why he was doing the things he was doing. I, of course, was like, I did all those things too. I was an idiot just like him, so I get it. But she would always question, what are we doing wrong? And I would question that too. Are we doing something wrong? But what it came down to, because Dean, there's so many kids that are wayward, always have been, probably more today with all the things that are affecting them. And I tell parents, let me pause there. The name of the book is Salt, Light, and Kids, Parenting Well in Today's Culture. But the initial working title was Leaving It All on the Field, which is a sports metaphor. You know, if you take a great athlete, they every time they walk off the field, they've done everything they can. When my editor, who's a lady, said, what does that mean? I thought, well, that's not going to be the name of the book. If you don't know what it means, there'll be a lot of other people. But that's the concept, I think, that I encourage parents with who have, you know, some issues with their kids and all that. As long as you seek the Lord and as long as you leave it on the field, meaning give it everything you've got, don't wish you had done more. And then whatever the results are, you have to rest in the fact that we did everything we could, and God promises that eventually they will, you know, come around to Him. And that's what we had to lean on a lot, particularly my wife. And we had the conversation over and over every time a challenge with my son came up. So as long effort is the key. And if you're giving effort that's centered around the Lord, you have to rest in that.
And let Him take care of the results.
That's right.
And then the other thing is you can't have your own identity tied up in how the kid's doing. This is something I've found, at least.
Yes.
Maybe if you do, it's a personal problem, but I think it's probably relevant to a lot of people. Like if your identity is tied into how this kid is doing, then that's a problem.
Yep. And that's such an issue, always has been. I told you I was a coach. And I coached my son all those years, and I had to really, I struggled to make sure that my identity wasn't in his success as an athlete. And now kids are growing up so much faster even. And, you know, well, you look at social media, how many likes did, you know, I get, or did my daughter get on her prom pictures or whatever? And it's difficult. So no. If we do that, we'll drive ourselves crazy.
Do you talk about technology in the book?
A lot.
What, summarize that, if you can.
Oh, boy.
I mean, Dean, people need to read the book, but just give us a little bit.
Yeah, technology has been great for a lot of reasons, but it's been awful for more reasons, mainly because I think the main conduit for Satan to get to our kids and to adults, but to our kids at younger and younger ages. And it's really scary. And if we're not aware, I love Matthew 10:16 that says, you know, the disciples are going out and Jesus says, be wise as serpents and gentle as doves. So we got to be Christ-like, but we better be wise as serpents, and parents better start paying attention when their kids are 4 and 5, not when they're 14 and 15. Right. And so technology is I think it's the biggest challenge parents have.
Yes, I agree. I think TikTok is awful, but I think that some of these platforms, I tell my kids, you know, actually salt and light is a term that I've used, because we can use these tools. You know, my grandfather used the radio early on. He was all about the radio. My dad had radio programs in Orange County and Los Angeles, and I don't think we need to be afraid of the media, I guess is my point, but we need to use it to be salt and light. We need to use it to encourage, bless, try to be authentic. You don't have to confess every one of your sins on Instagram. I think that would not be a good encouragement to people, but being authentic as you can be and being salt and light with the media is kind of the approach I've taken.
And thank you for what you do. I've watched your stuff, and that you're a perfect example of using it as salt and light. And salt, and that's where the title comes from, is salt, light, and kids. You know, Jesus calls us to be salt of the earth and light of the world. And we have to, as believers, use media and social media and technology for good, because there's Satan is overwhelmingly using it for bad things. So thanks for what you do. I want to say that. And
No,
yes.
thank you. Well, and that's why this program exists. I mean,
Exactly.
we're not afraid. That's the I read a scripture over the weekend. It was I forget where it's from, but it was a passage that God gave me during the pandemic, and it was talking about do not fear what they fear. And I think there that we need to have a sense, as people of faith, that we don't have to be afraid of the world. We're in it. We're not of it. But we can bring light and encouragement and blessing and not just, fall into the traps that, let's fight about politics and let's fight about this. There's plenty of things to fight about, but what if we just don't do that? And we say, I'm going to bless, I'm going to encourage, I'm going to be light. There's a different way, I guess.
There, I mean, there's two things, and the pandemic messed it all up, in my opinion, because that's kind of when the cancel culture started and all that. But we as believers can do, well, we tend to either do nothing or to be argumentative and angry and vitriolic and all of that. And neither one of those are good. I'm the worst at getting mad at people on TV that are saying stuff I don't agree with. And that's just not the way to be. That's not shining a light. That's not being salt.
Right.
That's making people think, that, well, you're just an angry Christian. And so, that Jesus,
Right.
wise as serpents and gentle as doves,
Right.
but we have to combat what Satan's doing with technology.
Yes. Yeah. That's a whole ministry right there. But what if we started a nonprofit? Hey, we're both starters, so let's partner. We'll start something and we'll train young people on how to use technology for good, and that'd be a good one. I got like five questions and I have like 2 minutes, so I'm gonna have to pick. You talk about not bubble wrap, maybe I'm paraphrasing this, you didn't use this term, but not bubble wrapping our kids. You don't not putting bumpers in the bowling lanes so that they never, throw a gutter ball. Talk about that for a second.
It's one of the, I have a whole chapter on that, I couldn't quote what I say, but it's basically, if your kids are bowlers and they have bumpers, they're going to bowl a good score, but the minute the bumpers go away, they're terrible bowlers. Where if
Right.
they don't have bumpers, they're going to have worse scores as they learn to bowl, but then they'll end up being better bowlers. Same thing with parents. I see parents today who just don't want their kids to face any adversity. They don't want their kids to have anything go wrong. And if it does, they're there to rescue. And that's so counterproductive to developing good salt of the earth in the secular, meaning good kids, because kids need to fail. I remember when I was young, I mean, if I got, which you could get spanked at school, which I did, I got my tail worn out. And I wasn't the only one. And then if I went home, I'd be in trouble. Now, if you get a C on a test, then the parent says, oh, that's the teacher's fault. It's not my kid's fault for not, it's how they prepared the
Right.
test. And so parents have to let their kids fail and then teach them resilience and resolve. Otherwise, they end up being 30-year-old, 12-year-olds.
Right. Good point. They need we need to they we really need to train them to get good at failing.
There's an art to
You're
failing. I hate
yeah,
losing, but
exactly. But you're going to look, I love like LeBron James. Lakers lost 4 out of 5, and I love like 2 days ago he comes out and says, we suck. We suck right now. And then last night they went out and won a game and played better. But there's going to be times, even if you're LeBron James as a basketball player, that you suck. Like there's days everybody sucks.
And don't sugarcoat it as parents. You know, don't, even when your kids are young, let them lose.
Yeah.
You know, in T-ball. And don't, you know, be one of the parents getting mad because your son, you know, got called out at first when he shouldn't have. Well, he got called out, you know, run faster next time. Right. You know, it's
right.
And not to be, you know, callous to your kids, but it helps so much if you let them fail some.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, hey, everybody, get the book, Salt, Light, and Kids. Steve Hines is the author, saltlightandkids.com, and you can find him on social media platforms. I think this is a powerful book. Steve is obviously a wonderful guy, and this seems like a word from God in terms of for today's parents. So I highly commend this to you. And Steve, it's so great to meet you. I feel like we're kindred spirits here.
I do too, Dean. I was so excited, and even more so now, friends for life, for sure. So thanks for letting me spend a few minutes with you.
I appreciate it. Well, we'll get this out, and we're grateful to know you. Give our best to Leanne, and thanks for joining us.
All right, brother. Thank you.
And thank all of you for joining us. Wonderful, wonderful start to our new year here, and we're grateful to have you. We'll see you next time.